let's kick it off by telling the listeners, Calum, about this trip you did in the summer of 23, and you know where it started and where it ended, and how many kilometers you covered, and how long it took.
For sure, yeah. So I started in Fort Smith on May 18th. Pretty sure May 18th, yeah. And I headed paddled down north on Slave River to Great Slave Lake. Then I went into the East Arm, then up the North Arm, stopped in Yellowknife for a bit, and then up the North Arm to Marion Lake, upstream on Marion River, on the Eda Trail to the Council River. And then from Council River, I went to Hoda Lake. And then from Hoda Lake, I portaged into the McVicar Arm of Great Bear Lake. And then I just kind of paddled all the way along the shoreline of that big big bay. I didn't want to make that big open water crossing. And then left Great Bear Lake on the Great Bear River to the Mackenzie, and then followed the Mackenzie to Tuck. I finished on September 16th, I think.
Man, and how many kilometers in total?
It was, I think, around 3,000 kilometers in total by the time I'd done all the going around the shores of the big lakes.
Amazing. And it's basically like, you know, for the, I guess, the listeners who aren't familiar with the geography of the Northwest Territories, it's like the full traverse, eh? From one corner to the other, pretty much.
Yeah, Diego. I kind of wanted to see as much of the different landscapes of the territories as I could, I guess, in one trip. And I think it would end up being a pretty good route for that.
Yeah, really. Like, you kind of start down, Fort Smith is beautiful big forest, and you get then into the Canadian Shield for what, the middle part of that trip, and then the Mackenzie Mountains along the Mackenzie River there, and then end in the tundra. Like, you really got it all.
Yeah, I got a nice glimpse of everything, and the two big lakes too. So yeah, it was awesome.
I was just before the call here, I was just checking out your Instagram account, which all the little videos you have of like the days of the trip are awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, they're really cool, man. And I was watching the one about the hail. Holy smokes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Where was that?
That was on the Eda Trail. It was on, I can find the lake on the map, but I can't, I'm trying to remember what that name of that lake was. It was on the Marion River, one of the larger lakes kind of near the top of the Marion. Oh, Hislop Lake, I think is what it was.
Crazy. And when would that have been? Like
that
peak,
was,
peak summer? Or?
Yeah, that would have been in early July or mid-July probably. Yeah, kind of a peak summer. That was pretty much, it was about that 1 week I had a couple big rain and hail storms, but other than that, the summer was like almost entirely dry.
It's funny you mentioned that, because as I was looking through all the videos of the trip, which I encourage the listeners of the show to go check out, and I'll post your Instagram link in the show notes and stuff.
Thank you.
As I was cruising through the videos, I was like, man, every day he had sunshine and like blue skies.
Yeah.
Like, what a summer, man.
It was, I keep saying it was almost turned out to be the perfect summer to do the trip, because it was an early ice out. It was warm, dry summer. And then even the fall was really, didn't get too terribly cold. So, and then, yeah, the only downside was the fires, but I managed to avoid all of them. So it kind of worked out really well for me.
Yeah, you kind of got lucky on that front, because so much of the territory burnt last year.
Definitely. Yeah, there was a lot of smoke.
You must have seen some, just like they were far enough away that they didn't interfere with your route.
Yeah, like the closest I got to some was, well, on the shores of Great Bear Lake, I passed three or four fires that were kind of, I don't know, maybe half a kilometer inland or kind of thing. But yeah, those are the only ones that were really close to where I was.
Well, yeah, even that's a little concerning, man.
Yeah, those ones were, if the wind would have picked up right to kind of pin you in a spot, then yeah, it could have been
a little dicey. Yeah. What made you want to do it? Like, it's a huge undertaking, and is like a commitment, you know, like to dedicate your whole summer to a canoe trip. Like what was the driving kind of motivation for the thing?
I kind of just, yeah, I really love the north and the wilderness up there and the landscapes and the people. And yeah, I remember it was, well, I used to work as a, well, I probably will still work in the future as a fishing guide in the summers at like fly-in fishing lodges, but I ended up taking this last summer off to do the trip. But I was up there, and then when I first got into canoeing, it was actually the start of the COVID and all the lockdowns and everything. So all those lodges were just shut down. But I ended up going on a canoe trip in Manitoba, a 20-day trip, my first trip. And yeah, it was kind of after that first canoe trip was kind of like I just fell in love with it. And ever since then, I kind of knew someday I wanted to do like a an entire summer one. And yeah, I kind of just felt that this year was the year, or last year was the year to do it. And if I didn't do it, maybe I never would. So I kind of just took the leap and went for it, I guess.
Man, good for you. You're pretty fresh into it then too when you did it, if you'd only really done your first trip a couple summers prior.
Yeah, like I've been canoeing for, I guess this would have been my fourth year of canoeing, I guess. Or yeah, fourth
Wow.
year probably.
Good for you, man. That's a rapid progression
Thank you.
from it and entering the folds of the canoe world to like doing literally one of the biggest expeditions of last year, I think. If not the biggest. I don't know if anyone did a longer trip.
I think well, I know Justin Barbour, and I think Newfoundland Labrador, he's got me beat for that year, I think.
Are you paying attention to what he's doing now? It's amazing.
Yeah, I've been following. I've followed him on, yeah, social media and that for quite a while. But yeah, that's an incredible trip to go through all four seasons.
Yeah. He's incredible. I like him a lot. I've been following him as well for years, and I've been trying to pin him down to get him on the show. But
Oh
he's a
yeah.
tough guy to pin down because he spends all his time in the
Yeah.
wilderness.
I bet, exactly. I know he looks like an awesome guy for sure.
Yeah. And I guess just for the listeners who don't know, do you know where he's starting? Like somewhere way up.
Yeah, I think way up in northern Quebec, I think, or
Yeah. What do they call
Ontario.
that peninsula? Oh, it's on the
Ungava,
tip. Ungava, yeah, like way up on the Hudson Bay side, like near the top, almost near the top. I forget the town he started in, and he's
yeah.
going from there, like traversing the entire like Quebec Labrador Peninsula there to what's the wherever the ferry runs from Labrador down to Newfoundland, and I think his plan is to paddle across that.
Yeah,
That's
I think I read that too. He's gonna make that, which I imagine that must be a, how far would that big
I
cross?
think it's like 40, 30 or 40 kilometers. Like it seems crazy to me.
Didn't realize it was that far, but yeah, that's a big crossing.
A huge crossing in salt water, you know, like kind of a perilous environment there. Which I think the fallback plan is to take the ferry, which is why he's gonna attempt it basically right alongside the ferry. And then from there, all the way, I think, to St. John's. And he's been doing it like he spent all last summer out there. And then I think took a quick break during freeze up and then spent all winter hauling a sleigh with all his, you know, winter camping gear. And I just saw the other day that he's stopped now for break up, but he'll be back at it, I would think, in a few weeks.
Yeah,
So.
that's a heck of a trip, and that hauling that sleigh in winter, that's definitely not easy.
No, and it's, you know, like paddling, you can cover pretty good ground, but doing that, you're like, I think on a good day, if you get 10K in a day, like that's a good day.
Oh yeah, I definitely would agree.
It's just slow going, but you know, if there's anyone that can do it, it's him. He's awesome.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think it's his he's filming it because he films everything, but I think it's all going to be on Netflix, which is great for him. That's
Oh, really
cool.
awesome. Well, that's great to hear, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like a pretty, you know, pretty big accomplishment, I think, to get a for just like a paddling guy from Newfoundland to get a show
Yeah,
on Netflix.
on Netflix, that's kind of a as big as you can go, pretty much.
Yeah. You filmed your trip too, eh?
Yeah, I did. I did film it. I'm definitely not a. It was kind of my first time ever filming something, but yeah, I did do my best to kind of film from start to finish.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
And what's the plan, like, if any, with the footage?
Yeah, I'm trying to make like a documentary out of it. I kind of started to try and do it myself, but I'm kind of thinking maybe be better to have a professional kind of do it up. But I've kind of just been picking away at the just going through all the video and getting it all lined up and cutting it up a bit. But yeah, so hopefully
So,
with next year or so or two, or maybe it'll be a thing you can watch.
neat, yeah. And in the meantime, all those videos on Instagram is, I guess, basically your work product at this point, eh?
Yeah. I'm trying to actually, now that you mention it, I haven't made a video for maybe a week, so I should get on that. But yeah, I've kind of just been trying to post fairly frequently and kind of do a post from each day of the trip was my plan.
Yeah, I like that model. Just quick little videos describing what you happened in a given day. They're cool. And I gotta commend you, Caleb, on good tunes, man. I was, all the Coulter Wall and
Oh, thanks.
all the good country tunes.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. I'm actually I'm not I like to I really don't listen to music a whole lot. So for me, kind of picking the song to go with the reel is almost my most difficult part of making the video.
Well, you've done a good job.
Thanks.
I'm a big fan. Who else did you have? Oh shoot, I forget his name. He's another young country guy. Anyway, doesn't matter. But I was telling someone the other day, all the best music these days seems to be country music.
Oh, yeah,
Like
I agree.
Coulter Wall is so good. Anyway, yeah, what a trip. I like the some cool things on there. Like the other one that was neat was the plane wreckage.
Yeah, that was super cool to see.
Where that must have been something coming along, and it's a big plane too. It's not like a little float plane. It's like a friggin' jet, or not a jet, but like an
Yeah, it's like
enormous plane.
a big freighter plane. Yeah, and I was told, I got to meet with I think it was John Bizot, and he kind of showed me a map, kind of a lot of the interesting sites all along the way on the Ida Trail, and he told me on this one lake I'd see this plane. And I remember at first I was like, oh, you got to show me like right where it is on the map to make sure I see it. And he's just like, don't worry, you'll see it. And when I got to the lake, yeah, you just kind of turn around the corner and you can just I mean, it's just kind of this big silver plane that shines in the sun, so it's almost impossible to miss. But yeah, it was super cool to check that out.
Do you know what happened? Like, do you know when it went down and what the story is?
Think the story. Well, it's actually neat. There was a I got added to this Yellowknife face or Yellowknife Memories group on Facebook, and there was actually a post on that exact plane in there, and I guess it had landed on the ice for a prospecting camp, I think in May, and I guess it was going to shore to unload, and I guess it broke through the ice on the shore, I think, and they kind of just obviously weren't David. I think they salvaged about everything out of it. It's just kind of the shell, but the shell's still there.
Cool. Yeah, it looks when watching the video, like such a neat place to check out.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then I was looking around back in the trees in that same spot because there's kind of on remnants of a prospecting camp, I think. And I actually found there's two other like smaller planes. I think they're like, I don't know, maybe 185s or something. They both look like they've been burnt, but you can just see the frames of them. So I thought that was
Yeah.
kind of, it's like there's three planes actually in that spot.
Wow. Yeah, neat. I will say, like, the I like I'm not from the north. I grew up in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And growing up without like knowing the north, you kind of picture, at least I did, I pictured in my mind like all these places that are vast and basically untouched, which the north is vast and it's got a lot of open space and room. But when you go to like do all these canoe trips, like I've done a few, nothing as big as you've done, but a few multi-week, multi-month trips up here. And you kind of realize that we've managed as like humanity to get our fingers kind of on all these places, even though they feel really far away. There's always signs of humanity, you know, like mining, old mining camps, or fuel barrels. I don't know if you've so many fuel barrels, but that's what
There's fuel drums all
fuel
over.
drums everywhere, man.
Or old trappers' cabins. Yeah, there's kind of a piece of history. Really, even in the most remote places.
Yeah. Did you go to when you were on Great Bear, you probably didn't go into radium, but you would have been close, eh?
I didn't know. I kind of wish that was it's kind of a place I'd want to check out, but no, I didn't actually because I went out, I went right from Hotta Lake kind of to McVicar Arm, so I didn't actually get to paddle through that kind of where that is, I guess.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to go there. Do you know the history about like the atomic bomb and what was going on there?
Yeah, like I've read a couple books on it. I'm not an expert, but I guess yeah, like Gilbert Levine, I think, found that mine, and then yeah, the uranium for the atomic bomb in World War II, I guess it's from there.
Yeah, they found uranium there, I think, in the 30s. In fact, I work for now my like in my professional life, I do a lot of work for the shipping company that runs the tugs and the barges down the Mackenzie River and then into the Arctic Ocean,
Oh,
which
awesome.
that company was basically founded because of that uranium discovery in the 30s. So they built, a fleet of tugs and barges that went at that time all the way from, I think, Smith, actually, because that was kind of the launch point into the north before they'd built a road to Great Slave Lake. They built this mine, this uranium mine. Like it is so far from anything on the western or eastern shore of Great Bear Lake. Yeah, and it was the uranium that was mined out of that mine. It was all very kept very secret. Which found was the uranium that found its way into the atomic bombs that were dropped on Japan during World War II. But then the sad story there is, they basically hired Dene guys from Delaney there on Great Bear to shuttle it back and forth, over the ice between the mine and I guess it would have been Toledo, or Norman Wells, wherever they were kind of then shipping it from. And there was zero, if even if there was an understanding, I think there must have been some understanding at the time of how dangerous uranium is, but there was, zero precautions taken. And a number of the people in Delaney got cancer and died very young and early.
Yeah, I
So it's
actually
kind of,
heard, yeah, right from people in Delaney about how, yeah, there was kind of from that era, there was pretty much everybody that worked in that mine did not end up living to old age at all. They all, yeah, passed away.
yeah, so it's got a kind of a dark, sad history, but
Definitely.
it seems like a really neat where the mine is also, I think, really beautiful. It's kind of mountainous there and kind of fjord-like, I think.
Yeah, while I was in Delaney, they went kind of on a boat trip over to that side of the lake, and I actually got to go along and kind of see that area. And yeah, it's really, really beautiful area for sure.
Cool. So when you got into Delaney, you kind of took a break and jumped on the boat with them and went over.
Yeah, I was in Delaney for I don't know, probably 3 or 4 nights. I really liked it there. Yeah, there was some really, really awesome people.
Yeah. Good for you for kind of going slow and taking your time to take in the communities. And I guess as a fishing guide, you probably did a fair bit of fishing too.
I did a lot of fishing.
Good for you. It's no better place in the world.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've fished in northern Saskatchewan, northern Manitoba, but yeah, it seemed like the Northwest Territories was kind of another notch on the scales. It was really good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I tell people. Like, after you fish up here, you kind of can't fish anywhere else, you know?
Yeah, it was incredible.
How many kilometers were you covering a day typically?
I guess it would all depend on the day, I guess. Like on the Big Lakes, Great Slave and Great Bear, I imagine I probably would average 25 to 30 kilometers a day. And then on the Ida Trail, I maybe was averaging 10 to 20, depending on portaging. And then on the Mackenzie was the highest of the trip, probably about 50 kilometers a day on average on the Mackenzie at the end.
Yeah, because you had a good current there.
Yeah, it definitely does have a nice current.
Did you feel pressure to like keep moving, or were you pretty relaxed about that? And if you didn't make it, you didn't make it, or were you kind of really? I know on those trips, the big trips I've done on, there's a tendency to, chew off a lot of ground because
Yeah.
you want to cover ground, and then but then you find you inevitably you feel the pressure to keep moving, which can kind of create anxiety, and you kind of feel guilty if you hang around camp all morning
Yeah,
doing nothing,
exactly. Yeah, you kind of gotta fight that urge to, yeah, just wanna eat up all the distance and kind of finish. But yeah, I really wanted, like, part of my goal of the trip was to take it slow and to really kind of enjoy it. And then the route I did, like, I feel if you really wanted to go, like if I would have went, traveled crazy hard and done no fishing and ate all dried food, I probably could have done that route and 100 days or something, and not take time to busy with people you met. But I really wanted to, kind of enjoy the trip, so I ended up, pushing it to, 122 days.
Yeah. That's good. Good for you, man. I commend you for taking that approach, because I've done both types of trips, and they're, giving it going hard is fun, but also it's also fun not going hard and doing lots of fishing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I definitely prefer that style of still traveling fairly hard, but it's nice to kind of enjoy the place you're going through at the same time.
Yeah. When you set off, like, were you nervous? Like, you just been a couple of years canoeing at that point for a few years, had done some trips in your home province, but nothing major, like nothing multi-month like this. Like, were you nervous when you set off?
I was actually almost the kind of pretty nervous and anxious the last couple days, of mostly just worried about all the preparation and getting up to Fort Smith, because there was already a bunch of fires in northern Alberta. So I was kind of just praying that they weren't gonna close down the highway. But when I actually finally got into the water and actually, kind of pushed off, then it was kind of like all my worries kind of just disappeared. It was kind of, I was just excited and just happy to be there.
Yeah, sweet. I find that's always the case. Once you're out on the land, you're like, oh, this is no big deal. I can handle it. I can
I
basically handle whatever happens, you know?
agree. It's that all the worry beforehand, worrying about all the things that could go wrong, or if you don't have everything packed perfect, or you forget something, or but yeah, once you're out there, it kind of just fades away.
Did you have any moments though on the trip where you're like, oh shit, I'm in a situation?
There was, like on this trip, there's probably, like, I guess the scariest moment of the trip would have been, well, the Mackenzie was obviously like at really low water levels this year. I think they said it was
Record low, yeah.
lower than like over 30 years. I guess is it confirmed as a record low now then?
Yeah, I guess it might depend where you are in the Mackenzie, but Great Slave, which feeds the Mackenzie, has never been lower since they started measuring, I think 60 or 70 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty crazy for a big lake to be low that much.
So yeah, you had a club, but you had a close call somewhere on the Mackenzie.
Oh yeah. So I was on that where the Ramparts Rapids are. I guess in kind of a normal water year, I was told that the right side of the river is kind of the side you want to take it. I guess it'll be kind of just gentle standing waves and, not nothing too crazy, but But this year, I kind of let my guard down a bit, and I had stopped to scout the rapid, but I didn't really look all the way to the bottom. And it's kind of a, I'd call it a fairly long rapid. And then as I was going down, then I seen these two ledges came in front of me. But at that time, there's kind of like those cliff, well, the ramparts is kind of like those cliff-like walls. So those walls were kind of about 10 or 12 feet up at that point. So there was really no way to, I don't think I would have been able to climb out, and I definitely would have been able to get the canoe out. So I ended up just going over these ledges, and yeah, I'm not like the biggest whitewater paddler. I'm definitely prefer to portage, even if it's very strenuous. So that was a bit frightening, but somehow I ended up making it through without tipping.
Yeah, good for you, man. I don't, until, like, I've paddled the Mackenzie, and or not all of it, but the section you've paddled, I've paddled.
Mm-hmm.
And until you are on that river, it's impossible to appreciate the volume of water that is flowing down. It is insane. It's insane.
I totally agree.
And it's kind of a funny story, because I also went through the Rampart Rapids, which I think it's kind of essential for the listeners of this show to understand that it's like a canyon.
Really,
like once you're in, there's not really the opportunity to get out. It's like vertical walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in there.
But when I went through in 20, I did the river in 2021. And the lake, at that point, Great Slave Lake, and then of course the Mackenzie, because all the water that is in Great Slave flows out the Mackenzie, was record high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you would have thought the ramparts, that set of rapids, was a lake, like, because we came in, and we probably, like you, had heard that there's a serious rapid there, and you got to be a bit careful. And same thing, we were told river rights the way to where to be. So we came in like pretty tight to shore there, as mm-hmm. we entered the canyon, and it was like a total letdown's not the right word, because it's really beautiful, but there was like no rapid. It was perfectly flat, because I guess at high water, all those ledges and things are under like several feet of water. So you would have never known that there's a rapid there, but it's supposed to show you how water level can change the dynamic of a river.
Really change. And then, like you said, like, you don't realize how much water flow there is there. Like, cause I was expecting this gentle ride down the right side, and, you know, I'd maybe underestimated the river definitely. And then all of a sudden, yeah, I seen these two big frothing, foaming ledges, and I'm just like, oh my God, what am I getting myself into here?
But you made it through unscathed.
Yeah, I don't know. Somehow, I don't know. I'd never paddled anything remotely close to that, but somehow managed to bounce my way through, I guess.
Good for you. Did you have a spray deck, or were you going with
that?
No,
I did not have a spray deck. My canoe was absolutely full of water after that.
Wow. What was your setup like? What were you? I know you had the tent and sleeping bags and things, but like any items that were kind of novel or basically bare bones, just given how much distance you had to travel?
Novel. I don't know if I had anything that was too unusual. Like, I had one of those double bladed, like a kayak style paddle I brought along. I'd never used one of those before, but on the big lakes, like when it was, you know, windy on Great Slave or Great Bear Lake, I found with that double blade paddle, I could definitely put up with much more wind than with the single blade, just the traditional paddle.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if I had anything too novel other than that. Like, a lot of fishing tackle. I had one of those fire boxes for having fire in, and yeah, I don't think I really had anything too unusual.
Yeah. Were you relying on fish for eating?
I had a bunch of dry food, but I had kind of planned to have at least one meal of fish every day.
Yeah. And not hard to do up here. You can.
No, yeah, up here it's pretty easy. But I always find there is, you know, you do get those times where maybe you catch a couple fish in the morning, but you're like, oh, it's a little far from lunch, I'm going to let them go. And then a couple hours later, all of a sudden, you can't catch one, but that's pretty rare in the Northwest Territories for sure.
Yeah. But it does happen. I've had that happen here too. Yeah, you're right. You can get kind of cocky.
Yeah, towards the, but eventually you kind of just learn to, if you catch a fish, then maybe you just eat then. But generally, yeah, in the Northwest Territories, you don't have to worry about that at all.
You're pretty young, eh? Early 20s?
I'm 24, yeah.
Yeah, cool. What's like the life lesson you learned on this? Like, what did you learn on this trip that is going to be like most valuable for you as you go forward in
Yeah,
your life as an adventurer?
on this trip, I guess kind of probably the two biggest lessons for me would be the first lesson was kind of, I guess, when I left on this trip, I guess you think when you leave on a big trip like this and you're going to be alone for so long, you think you might find the solution to life or something like that. I don't know, I guess thought I'd have this epiphany and I'd just understand everything, but that never happened at all. And I think that's kind of the very lesson I was looking for, I guess. There's no easy way to success and happiness. You got to really always put the work in to be happy and successful. And life's kind of, it's not about the finish, it's really about the journey, which was a lot of this trip, really living in the moment and stuff like that.
Yeah, no doubt. Was it kind of a bummer when you finished? Like, I find that on trips too. You spend all trip kind of, having the end goal in mind and the objective, but then when you get there and you come back to the city or whatever, you're like, oh, well, that's
Oh
kind
yeah,
of a
totally.
drag, kind of a drag, you know?
I remember, well, the last bit in September, like I was kind of, waiting for when that big cold snap would come, but it never really did. So it was kind of like, oh, the weather's nice, like try and stretch this out as long as I can, sort of thing. But yeah, eventually I did have to giddy up a bit at the end.
Yeah. And when did you hit salt water? Like where when I paddled the Mackenzie, we ended in Inuvik, so fresh we never dealt with salt water, but when does the river become brackish and you no longer have easy access to fresh water?
I was tasting the water like all the way to Tuck, and even at Tuck, I don't know if it's always like this, but I thought it wasn't even really salty really there. Like it's, I don't know if there's just so much water coming in from the Mackenzie, and I'm assuming it depends on wind direction and stuff, but I didn't even really think the water was too salty there when I got.
Wow, because it's like on the ocean. That's crazy. It's a lesson in how much water is being pumped out of that river.
Oh yeah, like that river. Like I've seen, before being on the Mackenzie, it's like, there's some big rivers in the Prairie Provinces, and I used to think those were big rivers, but now you see the Mackenzie and you see these rivers that you used to think were big, and it's like those rivers are like a creek. The Mackenzie's just, it's so wide. It's crazy how just wide it is.
Yeah, like kilometers wide, you
Yeah,
know.
it's really nuts. It's just like even at the ramparts is where it narrows right down, but even there it's bigger than most rivers.
Yeah, it's true. I remember it kind of feeling like a time warp, like you're paddling down the river and you're like, oh, it'd be nice. I can't wait to get around that next bend and see what's around it. Problem is it's like 25 kilometers away,
Oh yeah.
and like you're just like moving so slow towards it. You'll get there
Yeah,
in like 4 hours.
like there's strong current, but it's just so big that it doesn't feel like there's that much current. But I knew even like I'd usually always paddle a bit away from shore, so I'd be in the strongest current or try and follow the strongest current. But I know there was a couple times where I wouldn't be paying attention, then all of a sudden I'd be looking at the shore and be like, oh, I'm right in the middle of the river now, and it's like a 20 or 30 minute paddle to get back to the shore sometimes.
Yeah, crazy. I also remember like sometimes you'd be paddling and you'd come around like a point, so to speak, in the river, and then you'd be in an eddy that is like 5 or 6 football fields, the size of five
Oh,
or six football fields, you know? Did you ever have that happen?
yeah, like you really kind of, well, this year with it being so low, I think there's like, yeah, so many sandbars, and sometimes you'd end up, yeah, just in an area that was 5 or 6 football fields, but it was just like super shallow, like, you know, you couldn't even dip your paddle into the water. But I tried my best to stay in the deep channels. But yeah, there's definitely some places where if you don't take the right channel, it'll take you a lot longer.
Yeah. It's enormous. It's like just a it's a different beast. When I when we paddled it, that was like we our immediate reaction. We're like, whoa, this is an enormous river.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't quite ready for the scale. Just like probably you know, if yeah, same with you, if you're used to paddling those prairie rivers.
Yeah, no, I wasn't I knew it was big, but until you get there and really like appreciate how big it is, it's definitely.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that crossing on Great Bear Lake. Like I know what you're talking about, like looking at a map, but most listeners of the show won't talk know what you're talking about, but
I didn't do the crossing on Great Bear. I took the scenic route. I kind of went all the way along that big arm. But
right,
there is a
it's like
crossing. I think it's like 8 kilometers. There's like 3 and then 8 and then something, I think. But yeah, it's a big crossing on a big lake like that.
right, and you didn't do it, and then it, as a result of not doing it, it added like what, a week or two to the trip?
Yeah, it probably added, I don't know, 250 kilometers maybe, or it had to be at least 200 kilometers to go around that big arm.
Yeah, wow. What's that bay called for the arm?
I don't know if it's pronounced McVicar or McVicar, one of the two.
Yeah, well, people can look it up on the map. You must be real tempted to go for it.
To
It's a
do
lot
like,
of, it's just a lot of, it's a lot of extra paddling to go all
oh
the way
yeah.
around.
And then I guess me too, like as I said, like I wanted to go slow, and I felt like I had, you know, I didn't, it's not like I needed to make the crossing to make my deadline, I guess. You know, I felt like I had enough time to go around, but yeah, Great Bear Lake was pretty good to me too. I mean, there's a lot of windy days, but I didn't get stuck for like a week at a time, which I mean is definitely something that could happen there for sure.
Yeah, what's the shoreline like there? I've always wanted to go, but never been. And I've had a few people on who've spent some time on Great Bear Lake, but never really talked about it in much detail. Like, what's the shoreline of that lake like?
It kind of varies depending on where you are, like that first arm I'm talking about where I did the big detour, like that arm is pretty much all a low shoreline, kind of like a thick forest of pretty much all black spruce, and then kind of a nice lot of, like it's all kind of like a nice rocky beach, kind of these really really beautiful stones and stuff. And then sometimes there's a lot of these narrow rock points that will kind of jut out, and kind of on the tip of those points was probably the nicest spot to camp in that first arm. And then once I got into the next arm of the lake, there it was kind of like the shoreline was not densely trees. It was almost like the trees wouldn't really grow for like the first kilometer or two from the lake. Like there'd be little patches of them here and there, but a lot of the time it was like almost like a kind of like tundra for a kilometer or two, and then the trees would start growing. So that was
Right.
I really enjoyed that part. It was really, really beautiful and scenic. And then certain places in the lake, there's kind of some big hills, like the ones called, I guess, Grizzly Bear Mountain, like kind of a big hill. And then some areas there was even sand dunes and stuff. I thought it was a really beautiful, beautiful lake.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list is to go spend some time up there. The
Yeah,
trip I
definitely.
want to do that's partly your the trip you did is from Yellowknife up the North Arm, up to Great Bear on the Ida Trail there, and then but then instead of heading like northwest like you did, it would be northeast on Great Bear, and then you can cut. There's a route that where you can cut across into the Coppermine River, and then down the Coppermine out to Kugluktuk. Yeah.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I'd thought of that route. It would have been, but I didn't think my whitewater paddling was up to skill to do the copper mine. But yeah, that would be an awesome route for sure.
What's kind of your next, what's next for you? Like, do you have any other big trips or even smaller trips in the works? Or what do you, yeah, what do you?
I'd like to do another big trip. I'm hoping this summer I should have enough saved up to do another one. But I kind of would like to see the barren lands. I think if I did do another big one, kind of see the more of the tundra, I guess.
Yeah, it's a special place out there.
Yeah, and I know it's rare, but it would be cool to, if you did get lucky and seen one of those big caribou migration, would be a really, really cool thing to see.
Yeah, when I did a month long trip out there with my brother and the guys from Northern Scavenger.
Yeah, I watched that on YouTube.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, we saw the I mean, I don't think it was like it once was where you'd see hundreds of thousands of them, but we saw thousands of them.
Oh wow, yeah, that would
Or at least maybe that might be a bit of an exaggeration, but at least hundreds of them all doing the migration. It was really cool.
Oh yeah, no, that would be really cool. Really cool to
And
explore.
they're not afraid of you at all. Like they'll walk right up to you. It's astounding.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So no, that yeah, the Barrens are it's a neat environment. It's a little, I mean, it's a lot different. It's like you definitely feel exposed, you know.
There's a lot. Yeah, being out of the trees for that long would be definitely a different feeling.
Yeah. It's like when the weather gets bad, it gets like there's just nowhere to hide, you know.
Yeah, you're kind of fully exposed.
Yeah, I was thinking about the back to the hail videos, thinking like as I was watching it, like, yeah, that'd be a situation if you're out on the parents, you know.
Yeah, the other thing I always wonder on the barrens, like, what do you do if there's like a lightning storm, or, you know, because you're kind of like you're the highest object kind of.
Yeah, just hunker down, I guess, like lay on your Therm-a-Rest and hope for the best. Like it does have topography. It's not flat. I mean, you're from the prairies. It's like basically a northern prairie.
Yeah, that's what I kind of imagined it would almost be, but
Yeah,
rockier, I
a bit
imagine.
rockier, and it has some rolling hills. So like you can try to get down into the valley, or you know, even we had some bad weather on our trip, and you could try to find some get yourself into the lee of a hillside or something. It's
Yeah, I
just
guess there's
sometimes.
always something to break it up a little bit.
Sometimes there we you know there's not always we had one night where we were like basically forced to camp in a bad spot in a big wind and rain and just getting pounded, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just yeah, it's different. It's like the forest provides comfort, you know.
Yeah, you got shelter and build a fire.
Fire.
Definitely.
Yeah. Is like you're thinking that barren land trip for this coming summer or that's like a longer term thing?
I'm not, yeah, I'd like to maybe this summer, but I don't know if I'll, I'm not sure if I'll be ready yet to go on another big one yet at this time, but I've kind of got most of what I think I would need kind of planned out, I guess, but yeah, I'm not sure if I'll embark on that this summer or not. We'll see.
Yeah. And what are you like what are you doing in your time when you're not Canadian? Like I know you're doing a speaking tour and
Yeah, I'm kind of just doing that. I've been doing some speaking on the trip, and then like I said, that documentary, and I also, but I kept a journal on my route too. So I really love to read, so I kind of thought maybe I should try and write a book maybe, but that's something that, yeah, that'll be a ways down the road yet, but
Yeah, you should. You should. I'm sure people would read it, man.
oh yeah, maybe.
I'm sure they would. It's a cool trip. You did a cool trip, and I know, like, I remember hearing about you in the summer because that like you were in the CBC was featuring stories on you, and I remember just people around town like talking about, oh, you hear about that guy who's paddling across the territory, and then I wanted to have you on the show. I remember at the time thinking I gotta pin this guy down when he's done his trip and wanted to have you on the show kind of in the fall, but you finished right around the time we were all evacuated from Yellowknife and
Yeah.
there was a whole bunch of other stuff going on and I kind of forgot about you and then I saw a poster for one of your talks and I thought, ah, oh, that's the guy. I'm gonna get
Nice.
him back on the show.
Awesome. Yeah, well, I'm glad it worked out. It's awesome.
Yeah, man, it's a pleasure. I think it's so cool, you know, like that you just went for it. You're, you know, kind of early in your career and biting off a huge trip like that. And yeah, just cool. I think it's really cool and like such a commitment, you know, like when I was like 23 or 24, I was distracted by a million things, you know, but just like to have the focus to be like, I'm going to do this and spend my whole summer doing it and then execute on it too. Like a lot of people plan big trips and don't execute. So.
Yeah, and I'd almost say my distraction is canoe tripping. I guess I'm too distracted from other stuff to.
Good for you. It's a good distraction.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely could do worse, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, it seems to dovetail kind of nicely with what you do for work, like as a commercial fishing guide. Like, you know, now you get good stories now for your clients and you know where some good fishing is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's definitely have some stories to tell if it's a slow day of fishing for sure.
Are you still doing that, or that's something that's kind of put on hold?
Yeah, like I said, last summer I didn't, and then this summer if I don't go on a canoe trip, I will be doing that again this summer for sure.
Yeah, a lot of that up here too.
Yeah, there's if I do guide somewhere again, I'd probably want to try out one of those Northwest Territories lakes. I have a couple friends that guide up there, and yeah, it sounds one. I got to experience it too this summer, but yeah, the fishing's pretty awesome.
What was your biggest fish on the trip, out of curiosity?
I got a trout on Great Bear Lake it was close to 4 feet long, so that was my
My
biggest
goodness.
one.
Holy shit.
It was pretty crazy. Yeah, it was out of a canoe. Yeah, so like it almost probably pulled me like half a kilometer kind of around and like circle. And then at one point it looked like it was just going to take me, like it took me quite a ways out from shore. But at one point, you know, you're kind of worried, like, is this thing ever going to stop? But
Oh
eventually got it up.
my goodness, it's like a sea monster, man.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's pretty cool. Yeah. And the water is so clear there. You can see the fish like so far down too.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, how do you land a fish like that in a canoe? You just have to tire it out, I guess, to the point that it can't resist you at all.
And then I had brought this like it's a pretty big net, like definitely a net, you know, a normal canoeist. I guess this is kind of a novel item. A normal canoeist would not have bring as big of a net as I did, but I really enjoy fishing, so I had this big net, and I had lost two trout that were probably similar size to that kind of earlier in the week, both of them like right up at the surface. It's kind of hard to get them with the net when you're just alone in the canoe. They'll kind of kick out just far enough you can't reach them, and then if they come off, it seems they always come off right by the boat when they get their head shaken out of the water. But yeah, this one everything worked out, and I actually ended up landing it, and it was just kind of a crazy moment. I've got it. I have it all on video, and in my presentations I show the video of catching the fish, and it's pretty hilarious. And yeah, it's definitely probably one of the coolest videos I captured of the whole trip for sure.
I bet, man. Were you like hooting and hollering?
Oh yeah, I was just like celebrating.
That's pure joy, man. When you're like hooting and hollering and there's not a soul around, you know, that's pure joy.
It was cool, and I think I said the word holy probably like 20 times in this video. Just crazy.
Good for you. How old would a fish like that be?
Well, they say that I see it. They say they're really old, but then I almost heard that someone said there was a biologist in Northwest Territories that said they're maybe not as old as people think, but I can't really comment, I guess. But they say that they can be super old, but I don't, I'm pretty sure they're supposed to be, old fish.
I've often thought, like, it's amazing they get that big, you know. They spend like, well, like when break up on Great Bear is like July probably.
Yeah, they're under ice
Like,
over half the time.
yeah, way over half the time, like probably over three quarters of the time. They're just sw swimming around in water that's like a degree and it's dark, and there's not a lot of, I mean, maybe there is a lot of life down there. I don't know, but it's like, doesn't.
You catch a lot of fish there, so there's definitely something there for sure.
Yeah, it's famous. I mean, I think Great Bear is considered the best trout fishing in the world, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say it was. I would say that I had pretty high expectations, but when you're fishing from a canoe, usually like, because I've been on some great lakes with great fishing, but with a canoe instead of like a power boat, and then you got to make distance. It's tough to land the big one. So it was kind of a yeah. I was just super happy that I managed to catch that big one. Kind of wow.
Were you, when you caught that one, were you actively trying to catch a big fish, or were you just trolling along and then suddenly it took the line?
Yeah, like on that lake, I was pretty much trying to troll like 24/7. The only time I would stop trolling is if like the waves were big enough that I was worried about possibly tipping, then I'd reel in my line. But for the most part, I was trying to troll as much as I can on that lake. And then I even bought like brought along like a bunch of weights and stuff, because I know like lake trout fishing in northern Saskatchewan, generally, if, you could catch a shallow one, could catch them small ones shallow all year, but generally the big ones seem to be deep. So I had a bunch of weights and stuff too, but on Great Barrett, my best fishing was just fishing shallow. Like if I put the weights on, it's like you'd catch less actually. And yeah, it was just nuts.
Yeah, that lake, and I think some of the Barrenland lakes like that I've fished on are kind of unique in that the best trout fishing is in the top of the water column.
Yeah, definitely seemed like the shallow water was kind of where you wanted to be.
Yeah, those lakes don't get the, I think they call it the thermocline reverse, like.
Yeah, they wouldn't get the like the southern lakes would for sure.
Yeah, it's really unique. It's cool. Like we on Noah and Alex, who are like they're the northern scavenger guys. They are big fly fishermen, and they were like so stoked to be catching lake trout on the fly.
I bet. Yeah, no, I remember seeing those videos of that, and yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, did you take a fly rod, or you were just spinning?
I used to be a huge fly fisherman. Like I used to always love fly fishing over conventional fishing, but the last couple of years I really haven't fly fished at all much. I guess I don't know, I guess I realized, when you commit to fly fishing, you're really committing to catching significantly less fish. So I guess for that reason,
Right.
but it is so much more fun. But no, on this one, I did not take a fly rod.
Yeah. I mean, you can only take so much stuff too.
Yeah, I had three fishing rods already, so I figured I was already pretty heavily laden.
Yeah. That's like it's already what's the word I'm looking for? A bit rich, you know?
Yeah, I had way more fishing tackle, that's for sure.
Did you ever consider doing the trip with someone else, or always wanted to do it alone, or did you do it alone because really no one else, you couldn't find anyone else who could afford to take 4 or 5 months off? Like, how did that come to be?
Yeah, like I originally did, yeah, have someone in mind, but it kind of was, I guess they just really weren't willing to embark on a trip of that length, I guess, kind of thing. And then it was kind of just, I guess I was just so set on doing it last year, because I just, it really felt like, if I find an excuse not to do it this year, then, how am I going to do it later on? Once, obviously, as you get more established in life, you have less and less free time. So yeah, I just really want to do it that year. And then going alone is it makes it tougher a lot of the time too, but it is kind of there's some rewarding parts of it for sure too.
It sounds a bit like my friend Seth, who he's been on the show. He paddled across Canada from east to west,
Oh,
and
I think I've read about him too, I think.
yeah, he's, I mean, that trip I think was featured in some paddling magazines and things. But he's like, he'll tell you that he doesn't like paddling alone. In fact, he finds it kind of boring, but he couldn't find anyone who was willing to paddle across the country with him, so he was
Yeah,
forced to do it alone.
imagine it's a tough to find someone willing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like he basically did your trip 3 years in a row.
Wow. So it was like multi-year type thing.
Multi-year, he went east to west. I think if you go east to west, it's pretty much impossible to do it.
Yeah, because you're going upstream.
On the on like he I think he was North Saskatchewan River. You're basically going upstream, like halfway across, more than like on the St. Lawrence. You're going upstream. You're going upstream on the Ottawa. You're going, and then you're on Great. You're on Superior. It's the French down to Superior, so that's like flat water with a little bit of downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, I'm not super familiar with the route there through Lake of the Woods and then into Manitoba. But then, yeah, then you're upstream again on the North Saskatchewan. So you're basically upstream for well over half of the
yeah, that's
country.
A lot of upstream for sure.
Yeah, I had a guy, I had another guy on the show. I forget his name now. He's from BC, and he also paddled across the country, but he went west to east, and he did it in one summer.
Wow. Yeah, that's
he wasn't
that in one summer is a that's a big feat.
Big summer. He started really early because spring comes earlier in BC, and he portaged over the Rockies.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, he basically did the portage while like during breakup, you know. And then just booted it across the prairie provinces, and he was moving pretty quick. He's an interesting guy. He did the whole thing without any electronics, navigating exclusively with a sextant and paper maps.
Well, you know what? I think I've read about him too, actually, because I remember that sextant, I think.
Yeah. He's also been on the show. Both those guys. I've had two people who've paddled across the country going different ways.
Amazing when you like once you get into this kind of scene, you realize like how many other people are actually crazy enough to be doing these big trips like this too. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, man. Well, and you know, I guess welcome to the club. Like I kind of hold you in I place you in the same category as some of these other people who've done really big trips. So I commend you, man. It's a sweet thing you did. I guess maybe tell the listeners, Kalen, like where they can find your Instagram and your videos, and fill everybody in a bit on your speak. I think you still have some speaking dates coming up, and
So I'm on Instagram is Kalem_Watson, and then I'm on Facebook too. Facebook's Kalem Watson Adventure is called. And then I am planning to do some more presentations. I think I'm actually going to be doing some in BC and maybe Ontario too, actually, but I haven't actually announced the dates. None of the dates are finalized yet. It always amazes me. It seems to take way longer than you'd think to get them finalized. But if you stay tuned to my social media, maybe I'll be doing a presentation on the trip somewhere near you. And I am planning to do a virtual presentation on like Zoom or something like this kind of in April too. That I'll probably be announcing soon.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll hopefully the listeners will kind of pay attention to your social media and join you when you either in person or on Zoom. Send me the link for the Zoom thing. I'd like to check it out.
Definitely.
And do you have any? You could probably sell out a venue if you came to Yellowknife. Do you have any?
I know. Yeah, I've been asked. I should. I do want to get back to Yellowknife too sometime for sure. So yeah, that could definitely be. And even if it wasn't this year, I mean, I could always do it next year too. But yeah, I definitely do want to get back to Yellowknife. I really, really enjoyed it there when I stopped in.
Well, you're always welcome. Always welcome to. We got a little bunkhouse in the back. Stay here if you come, and if you do a Barrenlands trip, let me know, and I can kind of share. There's people with a lot more wisdom than me, but I got a bit of wisdom.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely would appreciate that.
And we could do a day paddle or something around town. So
yeah, for sure, for sure.
Cool, man. Well, we'll sign off there. Yeah, good luck. Good luck with the speaking tour, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was nice to get to meet you virtually.
Yeah, likewise. Can't wait to meet in person.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. See you again. Bye.
I'll definitely let you know.
Sounds good, man. See ya.
Take care. Bye.